So joining us now is Mike Psyche. Mike is a senior designer for the LEGO Group. Mike, welcome to Innovation Navigation.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. Thank you to you and LEGO for sending me an F40 kit. I built it with my kids last weekend, and it's sitting here in front of me.
That's great.
Yeah, as the LEGO fans say, it's a nice build. So I'm sure lots of kids and not a few adults dream of being able to design sets for LEGO. When did you decide that you wanted to be a LEGO designer?
I was also one of those kids that pretty much from the first time I was building with LEGO, I knew, okay, this is what I want to do. This is the best thing. But I didn't really know it was a career option. So I was building with LEGO my entire life, but it wasn't until I'd actually gotten a degree in mechanical engineering, graduated from university, worked a few years as an engineer, realized, hey, working as an engineer isn't quite as fun as studying engineering, that I started to kind of turn my mind toward other fields. And at that same time, I also started doing some commissioned work. I was building all sorts of models for fun on my own out of LEGO. And I had some commissions, and that was the first time that someone told me, build this, even if you don't necessarily want to, and I'll pay you for it. And I thought, oh, that sounds like a really not a great time. But the first time I did it, I actually enjoyed myself. And I thought, hey, you know, I could see myself doing this for a job. And that was kind of what led me to the thought of, hey, I'd kind of like to try to actually work for the company.
And so what's the interview process like at LEGO to get a job at LEGO?
I don't want to say too much because it's a little bit secretive, but it's like a 2-day interview that you go to. And when I went, there were 17 of us actually interviewing, and we didn't know, are we all interviewing for one job or are there multiple jobs? And over the course of the 2 days, they had us doing some different building exercises, some sketching exercises, which is actually really funny for me. The first day that we sat down and they were asking us to draw, I was thinking, I haven't drawn since I was 16. I don't know if I can do this. So I immediately felt out of my league there, but I guess it worked out in the end.
And once you, so it's basically 2 days of building, huh? And drawing and just really, it sounds like a very active interview process.
Yes. So various exercises to judge, you know, can you handle LEGO? Can you handle teamwork? Are you creative? How do you deal with stress?
So this F40 set is a pretty complex set. Would this be something that you would start off doing? Or when you start your career at LEGO, is there a career progress? Do you start with simpler things or assisting another designer before you get your lead role on designing a more complex set?
I guess it kind of depends on your background when you start. So I had a pretty competent building skills when I started, but this was definitely not the first model I worked on. I actually first started on little $5 mini models for Creator, and I did a few of those to really get into the mindset of how do you design a LEGO set, what's the process, what are the different approvals, what are the people that need to sign off. So you definitely have to start small and work your way up, because there are a lot of different rules that you have to follow when you're making an official model instead of just building something for fun at home.
So part of it is learning how to build LEGO models, right? Which is not always the same as the models you might build for yourself out of a box of loose bricks. And then part of it is also learning how LEGO does product development.
Yes, exactly.
So take us inside. For this Ferrari F40 set, start at the beginning. Where did the idea come from for doing a Ferrari F40?
So the beginning would be well before I was working at LEGO, and that would actually be back, if you remember, we launched in 2010 the Volkswagen camper van.
Oh, and, yeah, very nice, very nice.
Yes, and so on the success of that, we followed up with the Mini Cooper a few years later. And then we thought, okay, when I started, it was about the point that the Mini Cooper was being developed. And then about a year after I started, we were starting to talk about, okay, what could be the next car in this line. And we wanted to do something that was kind of, the Mini Cooper and the camper van are very classic cars. And we wanted to see, can we kind of broaden our range? Instead of sticking with these really classic loved cars, can we also do something that's a little more aggressive, something that a real car fan can appreciate, that's got that cool factor, but can also still have some of the classic feel of, say, the camper van. And we had an agreement with Ferrari already. We've had a long history with them. I think going back to the early 90s, we've been doing Ferrari kits. And so the Speed Champions line was already kind of working on a contract with Ferrari. So we thought that would be a good route to go down. Let's see, is there a Ferrari that we could do that would kind of fit nicely in our line?
And so the Speed Champions are, that's a smaller car for younger kids to play with. And so that already had a license agreement in place with Ferrari. That group did.
It was actually at the time they were developing Speed Champions. So they'd already begun negotiations for a licensing agreement. And we thought, hey, it could be great to just kind of involve ourselves in those discussions.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so you get connected with Ferrari through the Speed Champions group, and then how did you come around to the idea of a much more complex and higher end kit? Was that from you or Ferrari?
Well, I guess that was from us, because we knew we wanted to follow up the camper van and the Mini Cooper, so we knew we wanted to do this bigger scale vehicle at this higher price point, more complex, targeted to an older audience than Speed Champions.
Okay, and so did you take a model down? I mean, what was the first meeting like with Ferrari?
I was not actually involved in the very first meeting, but we did take a model to that meeting to show them, hey, this is the direction that we're heading in with this. And they gave us some comments on that really gave us a clear direction for where we wanted to take the development.
And why the F40? I mean, there's lots of different Ferraris. Why that one in particular?
Well, if you ask car fans, I think they'll tell you that the F40 is pretty much the most classic of the Ferrari supercars. It's, people call it one of the last analog supercars. So it doesn't have traction control. It doesn't have an automatic gearbox. It's a very difficult car to drive, and it's kind of like a huge legend among car people. So we thought it matches. It's old enough now that it is a classic, but it's also still got that cool factor to it.
We're talking with Mike Seike. He's a senior designer for the Lego Group and is the creative lead on the Ferrari F40 kit that just came out recently. And if you have questions on how Lego models get designed, how professional Lego designers work, give us a call at 844-WHARTON. That's 844-942-7866. So, Mike, this kit is relatively complex. It has over 1,000 pieces. It is 16 studs wide, but you could have made it smaller or larger, and each of those things gives you some trade-offs. How do you decide on the size of a kit and the cost of a kit, the price point, rather, of a kit?
We chose the size. We wanted to be in a similar size to the previous cars we'd done. And so actually what I started with is I took the different wheel sizes that we have, because when you get up to these larger models, you actually have a very small selection of different wheels. So I took a couple of the different wheels that we had just to see, okay, how big is this going to make the car? And it was a choice between this one or the next size up. But the next size up was just going to end up with a massive model that didn't really fit kind of in the line that we've been developing. So it was actually pretty easy to decide on, okay, this wheel gives us a scale. We go from there. Let's see how big it is.
No, I would not have guessed that. I would have thought that, either the seat is four studs wide or five studs wide, and then you go from there. But it's the wheel, huh?
At least that's what I went with.
Okay. There's some real skill in building a swoopy, curvy car like a Ferrari out of blocky Lego elements. How did you learn to make those curves and angles that you needed to represent to truly represent a Ferrari F40?
Well, so my kind of passion with Lego is that all of the different ways that you can combine the elements, I think, is what makes the system so interesting. And I love trying to find ways to connect things at angles that are not, you know, 90 degrees or 45 degrees. And so it was a really nice project for me to work on, because there's a lot of sections where instead of using a curved piece, I just angle all of the pieces in that section, and that creates an angled shape. And so it's really something that I just do mostly through trial and error, where you say, okay, I want this piece to sit here at this angle. Now, how can I find a way to get that connected to this chassis?
And where did you learn that? I mean, how did you learn that? Do you have favorite Lego kits or other designers that you've taken inspiration from?
There are two sets that I think of when I think about kits that really had an influence on me. There was a, in 1994, my parents got me a set called the Sail and Fly Marina. It was a big marina with a seaplane, two racing boats, and a crane. But the part that really blew me away was there was a little fuel truck that came with it, and it actually used a bracket with a couple of plates on the front of the bracket that made the headlights of the truck line up perfectly in the Lego system. And that was the first time that I'd seen that, oh, there's a relationship between the height of bricks and the width of bricks. And it's actually a really beautiful relationship. And you can use that to make things you can take a piece that's going up and you can turn it, and all of a sudden you have a new angle instead of the angle that it creates when it's sitting flat. So that kind of opened my eyes to that the Lego system is bigger than just what you can do with stacking bricks. But the second set was in 1999. There was a Ultimate Collector's X-Wing set. I don't know if you remember that one, but it was at the time it was revolutionary to me, at least. And the way that the pieces were used to make different angles and shapes was really, really incredible. So that stuck with me for a while. I remember I didn't have the money to buy it, so I would look at pictures in the catalog and I would see, hey, how did they do that, and try to replicate it with the bricks that I had at home.
You know, when I was wandering around Lego, I met a guy named Eric Bach, who really campaigns hard against people like you. He does not believe that Lego bricks should have studs on top and sticking out the side. He thinks that that's a violation of the Lego system, that it should be more of the club sandwich type of thing where you stack one thing on top of another. And there are these kind of, you know, system gurus and people who feel like people like you are really taking the system in the wrong direction. How do you respond to that undisguised scorn from within your own company?
Well, I guess I would say that building sideways, as you say, or building in non-standard directions is what I love about Lego. That relationship, it's a shame to say, okay, we have this relationship between the height in the width that adds up to this integer number, and we're just going to ignore that that's a capability. So I think it would be a real shame to say we can't do that. And even if you took away those elements that have the knobs on the sides, you would still have ways to orient the bricks that way. You would just do it in a much more complex way. You'd have to use a clip, or you'd have to build things together that lock pieces into place, but the relationship of the dimensions would still exist, so you would still be able to build that way. I think what's nice with our bricks that have studs on the side is it makes it easier to do that. So it actually makes it more intuitive, I think, instead of making it less intuitive.
So we're talking with Mike Saiki. He's a senior designer at the Lego Group and is the lead designer of the Ferrari F40 kit. Mike, tell us about the process of developing a new kit. When you go through, like, say you've done the first round of this, who looks at it? How do you get the sign off? What kind of approvals do you need? What's the process from getting your first rough design to something that's actually out in the market?
So there are, I don't think I could count the number of people that are involved. It's a really big team of people that are involved from the very first concept all the way until you release the final product. So you have to get, first of all, my manager is involved, my creative lead. So he's giving me input on how he wants the model to look. And then with something, with kind of a more flagship model like this, his manager is probably also giving input because they have an idea of how they'd like to see it go. And then we have a group called Design Lab here, and they're kind of what you were saying, like the guardians of the Lego system. And I'll show them my models, and they'll give inputs of, you know, this part here is not strong enough, or the play function in this section is not logical enough or simple enough for a kid to understand, so you need to rethink that. And then, of course, we also get input from the building instructions team. So we check in a couple of times with them throughout the development of a model, and we actually, at one point, maybe at two times, we actually sit down and build the entire thing from the very base all the way up, showing them exactly, hey, here's how I think these bits could go together. And it's especially important with a model like the F40, or if you have a small model, you can kind of look at it and say, yeah, I can imagine a way that we could make building instructions for that. But with this car, if you look at the outside of the car, you have no idea what is going on inside there. So you really have to take the whole thing apart and see exactly how all of the different bricks connect to each other in order to say, yeah, I think we could make a building instructions for this.
Now, when you go to the design lab, they're the ones that will also say, you know, we have this piece in red or not, you know, and maybe you have to take a piece and mold it in a separate color. And sometimes you even need unique pieces that wouldn't be used in other kits. How does that conversation go?
So that happens specifically talking about pieces that are not in other kits. We did make a couple of new shapes for this model, and that actually happened very, very early on in the development process. That's kind of part of our pitch to the kind of higher-ups that are deciding what products will we do this year. Part of our pitch is, hey, we want to make a Ferrari, and in order to do that, it is going to require some new elements. And so if they say no to that, then we have to reevaluate and say, okay, maybe we can't do a Ferrari. So when we initially thought of let's do an F40, the very first thing that struck us was, okay, we only have two big windshields developed. I think they were made sometime in the 90s, and both of them were developed for trucks. And they're very square, and they're not going to work for this car. So either we do what we've done in the past, we have no windshield, and we just represent the A-pillars, which we really didn't want to do since we've kind of established in this line of cars that we like to include the windows where we can. Or the other option is we make some kind of a new windscreen.
Now, that's a major impact on cost, right? If you're doing something just for one kit, then you've got to amortize the cost of that mold only over that kit, right? So that changes your cost structure pretty dramatically.
Well, so when we develop a new element, we want to make it something that could be used elsewhere. So if we especially look at the window on this car, it is a very nice shape for the F40, but we've actually made it what we would call a generic element. So it doesn't have any special curve to it. It's almost like a wall element. It just has this cut in on the side. So when we develop an element, the hope is that it will get used in other products at another time. And that's hopefully the case with this windshield. So it will affect the cost, but the more we can make it an element that can be used in other products, then the less that will be an effect for us.
Got it. And what else? Did you have other pieces that are unique to this kit?
We also made a rim insert. It's this the kind of star shape that goes into the rims to make that really iconic F40 rim for the car. And that one we felt, okay, let's just go totally true to reference. Let's make it as accurate as possible. Otherwise, is there really a point to making that rim insert?
Got it. Okay, so you've gone through the approvals process with all these different groups, and they've signed off on it. You've got the instructions people working on the instructions. Do the retailers ever get involved?
That's kind of outside my range as a designer. I know there are check-ins where there are certain people that would give input, but I don't really know much about that.
And then at the end of the year, if you don't mind me asking, how do they decide whether you did a good job or not? You know, when it comes around to bonus time or promotion time, how does this affect whether, you know, Mike Psyche is seen as doing a good job or not?
That's a great question. So this product is not only my work. It's the whole team of people that are involved in it. It's people from design labs, it's building instructions, it's packaging engineers, it's molding engineers. So my performance isn't necessarily based on the quality of this model. It's more, did I perform to the deadlines that were given me? Did I deliver when I was asked to deliver? Did I have problems with reviews or anything like that? It's not so much the success of the product is all on me. It's something that we accept as a company.
Okay, so if you carry out your part of the process efficiently, well, you know, collaboratively, then you're going to be seen as a good designer. And it's more the success of the kit is the function of a lot of other people's input.
Yeah, and so the hope is that by carrying out the process, that we have the process set up that by carrying it out efficiently and in a good way, you end up with a good product.
Got it. Now, is there one of the things that I have always admired about Lego is that is their ability to innovate around the box, that it's not just a box of bricks, but there's also something else going on. What is new and different about this kit besides the kit? I mean, is it sold in any different channels? Is it promoted in any different way?
Not that I know of specifically. I can say one thing that I don't know if you noticed this when you're building it. It's semi-related to the kit, but I also think it's a pretty cool innovation. Is if you look in the building instructions, there's actually highlights around all of the elements that are placed on in each step.
Oh, yeah, I like that. I noticed that. Yep.
And it makes it, the first time I did a test build of the building instructions, I thought, wow, this is so much easier than any other Lego kit I've built before. Did I make too simple of a model?
Huh. That's great. Yeah, this is not sold in Ferrari dealerships?
It is sold in Ferrari stores. I don't know if it's carried in their dealerships or not. I was actually in Milan a couple weeks ago, and there was a Ferrari store there, and so my friends and I went and we saw it on the shelf in the Ferrari store, which is pretty cool.
Okay, so it's kind of a channel innovation as well as a cool kit. We got a question from Serena in Florida that we didn't have a chance to get to when she was on the line. But she has a young son who would really love to be a Lego designer. What advice do you give to kids? You know, a 7-year-old comes up to you and says, wow, you're a Lego designer. What should I do so that when I am your age, I can be a Lego designer? What advice do you give people at various ages?
Well, I'm not really a good person to give advice because the way that I got here is not really necessarily the best way to get here. But I would say the most important thing is you should keep building with Lego and enjoy it. And if you don't enjoy it anymore, then you're probably not going to enjoy coming for a job here. But I would say try to study something design related. You know, finish high school.
Yeah.
Try to go to college. Try to study something design related. Uh-huh. In college, keep building with Lego. And one piece of advice that I tell people of all ages is find someone, get a commission. And I'm not saying get a paid commission, but find someone who will tell you, build me this car, or build a copy of my house or whatever. Something that you don't want to build would be even better. And see what you think of putting that together. And if you enjoyed that, then come talk to me and we'll figure out something.
Okay, so build something for somebody else. Okay. Our next guest on the show is a guy named Joshua Gantz, who just wrote a book about disruption. And I think Lego is a fascinating example of that because by any definition, Lego's getting disrupted, right? There's lots of new technologies that are changing the future of construction play that are allowing people unlimited virtual bricks, that are letting people print out in ABS plastic their own bricks of any shape. And, you know, these technologies are often kind of rough, but they're improving really rapidly. How do you see the future of construction play, creative construction play, evolving?
I hope that we'll continue making Lego kits for a number of years. I think there's something nice about getting the molded elements. And also, I hope that the designs that we provide are also giving some value to the kit. But I do think it's really cool to see the way technology is coming. What I'm really excited to see is someone to develop a 3D scanner so that you could actually, you know, we talk a lot about taking maybe something from the digital into the physical universe. But if you could have a 3D scanner so you could build a Lego model and then scan it in, and now all of a sudden you could have a Ferrari F40 made of Lego in your video game. I think that would be amazing. I don't think it's too hard to do. I'm not saying I could do it, but I'm hoping someone figures that out in the next few years.
Right, so that a camera from my Mac could have been watching me build this kit and tracking every piece, and then when it's done, I have both a physical and the virtual Lego kit that I could play with.
So maybe it doesn't even have to watch you build it. Maybe you just you can hold the model up to the camera. And somehow your computer is smart enough to figure out what it should put underneath to get all those bricks in the right place.
Very cool. So we've been talking with Mike.
It's very future technology.
Yeah. So we've been talking with Mike Seike. He's a senior designer for the Lego Group and the lead designer for the Ferrari F40 kit that just came out recently. Mike, thanks very much for coming on Innovation Navigation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.